بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله وسلم على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه ومن استنى بسنته إلى يوم الدين. وبعد، الحمد لله. We are continuing our discussion from last night. After covering a number of narrations on the virtues of the Quran, particularly those connected with reciting and memorizing, last night we began talking about the different narrations concerning the Ahlul Qur'an, or the people of the Qur'an. And the other term that is used for Ahlul Qur'an is Hamalatul Qur'an, or the bearers of the Qur'an. And we had mentioned that the most famous work that addresses the etiquette of such people is the classic work by Imam al-Nawawi, rahmatullahi alayhi, titled At-Tibyan fi Adabi Hamalati al-Qur'an. And we continue that discussion about the bearers of the Qur'an, looking at nine different narrations, relatively short except for two of them. The first narration tells us that the bearer of the Qur'an, which is the one who memorizes it, is gratified with aql, with intellect. And this comes from a hadith recorded by Ibn Adi in his Kitab al-Du'afa. And when you hear that name, Ibn Adi, and you hear that work, Al-Du'afa, this is a collection of weak narrations. But as we mentioned a while back, these weak narrations that are not severely weak are still used in Fada'ilul A'mal, in virtuous actions. So this is coming from Anas ibn Malik with a weak chain, in which it's reported that he said, the one who gathers the Qur'an, for that person, Allah shall gratify his intellect until he dies. And what that means is Allah shall preserve that person's intellect until they die. Now, as we said, this hadith, or this athar from Anas, is weak. Nevertheless, the meaning is true, because it is commonly observed. It's something that is mujarrab, as we say in Arabic, tried and true, that when a person dedicates their life to memorizing the Qur'an and serving the Qur'an, Allah preserves their intellect. They don't tend to suffer from dementia or things like that. The other narration is recorded by Ibn al-Najjar, and he relates an athar from Abdullah ibn Umar radiallahu anhuma, who says, the bearers of the Qur'an, hamalatul Qur'an, they are the awliya of Allah. They are the friends of Allah. So anyone who takes them in enmity has taken Allah in enmity, and anyone who takes them as allies has taken Allah as an ally. So here, the importance of honoring the Hamalatul Qur'an. And the next narration is recorded by Al-Imam Ad-Daylami in his Musnad Al-Firdaus. And this comes from Sayyiduna Ali ibn Abi Talib radiallahu anhu. And he relates that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, indeed, the Hamalatul Qur'an, the bearers of the Qur'an, are beneath the shade of Allah on a day in which there is no shade other than His, in the company of the prophets and the elect. Now, most of us know the famous hadith about the seven types of people who will be shaded beneath the throne on the day of judgment when there is no shade but the shade of Allah's throne. But it's not limited to those seven categories of people mentioned in the famous hadith. In fact, there are a number of other narrations which describe different types of people besides those seven who also enjoy this special favor of being shaded beneath the throne on the day of judgment. In fact, some of the ulama have compiled the rasail, small works, collecting those narrations showing who else beyond those seven also enjoy that blessing. And among them, as you see in this narration, the Hamalatul Qur'an, the bearers of the Qur'an. Not only will they be beneath the shade of the throne on the Day of Judgment, according to this narration, they will be in the company of the prophets and the elect. The next narration talks about another virtue of Hamalatul Qur'an, the bearers of the Book of Allah. And that is their shafa'a, their intercession. The fact that Allah Ta'ala allows them to intercede for some of their family members who are destined for a temporary punishment in hell to get out of that situation. And this is in a hadith recorded by Imam al-Tirmidhi from Ali ibn Abi Talib radiyallahu anhu, who relates that the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, "Whosoever recites the Quran from memory and upholds as halal what it has made halal, and upholds as haram what it has made haram, Allah shall admit him into paradise and allow him to intercede for 10 of his family who have earned hell." So this is one hadith of a few that talk about the shafa'ah, or the intercession that Allah allows for those who have memorized the Quran. In addition to being beneath the shade of Allah, and being from the awliya of Allah, and being gratified with intellect and interceding, we know from another narration that the Ahlul Quran are described as the knowers, the people of deep knowledge among the people of paradise. And this is found in a hadith recorded by Imam al-Tabarani in his Mu'jam from Husayn ibn Ali radiyallahu anhuma, who said, "The bearers of the Quran are the knowers of the people of paradise on the Day of Judgment." So on the Day of Judgment, people are of different categories. And the people of the Quran will be in the category of those who are arifun, people of deep knowledge. So these narrations, these five narrations we've just presented, talk about the virtues of one who is described as hamidul Quran, one who has memorized the Book of Allah. In addition to these, there are some narrations that talk about how others are supposed to honor these individuals. And as we said last night, honoring Ahlul Quran is from honoring the sha'air of Allah, the sacred symbols of Allah. The hadith in Bukhari tells us from Sahl ibn Sa'ad radiyallahu anhu, he mentions a story. He says that one day, as he was sitting with some of the companions in the presence of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, a woman stood up and she offered herself in marriage to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. You imagine, they're in a gathering and she comes and stands up and offers herself in marriage. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam did not say no; he kept quiet. But he didn't want to marry her, but doesn't want to break her heart either by saying no. So he remained silent. So she stands up a second time and makes a second offer for marriage, asking him to take her in marriage. And again, she gets no reply. Then she stands up a third time with the same marriage offer. And when she stood up the third time, everyone in the crowd, they knew what was going on. He doesn't want to marry her. So one of the Sahaba took advantage of that opportunity. And he stood up and he said, "Ya Rasulullah, marry her to me." And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam asked that Sahabi, "Do you have anything to give her as a mahr, as a bridal gift?" And this man was poor. He said, "No, I don't have anything." And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam told him, "Go and look for something to give, even if it's just an iron ring." Not a diamond ring, not a gold ring, even if it's just an iron ring. So he goes out and he's looking for an iron ring or anything of similar value. But he comes back and he says, "I couldn't find anything, not even an iron ring." And so the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam says to him, "Do you know anything of the Quran?" And he says, "I know chapter such and such and chapter such and such." And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Go, for I have married her to you for what you know of the Quran." So what that means is the mahar is that he teaches her that chapter of the Quran. And this was well known in their time. In another narration, and this narration is not a hadith, it's an athar, meaning it's a statement attributed to a sahabi. This is recorded by Mullah Ali Al-Qari, the famous Afghani scholar of Qira'at and Hadith and Arabic, who lived in Mecca. He mentions in his commentary on Mishkat al-Masabih, Mirqat al-Mafatih, he mentions an athar from Imam Ali radiyallahu anhu. And this is a famous narration from Imam Ali, and you find it in many of the books of tafsir, many of the books that explain the virtues of the Quran. It's a very eloquent statement in Arabic. The English does not do it justice. But he says, the Quran is superior to everything besides Allah. So whoever respects the Quran has respected Allah. And whoever disrespects the Quran has belittled the right of Allah. The Quran is an intercessor whose intercession shall be accepted. Shafi' wa mushaffa'. So it intercedes and its intercession shall be accepted. It is an advocate whose advocacy is accepted. Whoever takes it as a leader, an imam, shall be led by it to Jannah, and whoever puts it behind him will be driven by it to the hellfire. The bearers of the Quran are surrounded by Allah's mercy and have acquired the light of Allah. Allah will take an enmity, anyone who takes an enmity, those who study the speech of Allah. And whoever takes them as allies, Allah takes them as allies. The evil of the world is averted from the one who listens attentively to the Quran, while the tribulation of the hereafter is averted, kept away, from the one who recites the Quran. It is better for one to listen attentively to a single verse of the Book of Allah than to have Mount Sir in gold, which is a large mountain. The reward of the one who recites a single verse from the Book of Allah is greater than everything beneath the canopy of the heavens. Verily, within the Quran, there is a chapter that is tremendous in the sight of Allah. Its companion is called noble in the sight of Allah, and its companion will intercede on the day of rising for more people than all of Rabi'a and Mudar, the two largest Arab tribes. It is Surat Yasin. This is an athar from Imam Ali radiallahu anhu. Another virtue of those who memorize the Quran is that they have a dua that is mustajab, a dua that is answered. And this comes from a hadith recorded by Imam Muslim from Abu Umama radiallahu anhu, who relates that the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam said, the bearer of the Quran has an answered supplication, a dua that is mustajab. And now we end with our discussion on the Hamalatul Quran. Everything that we've seen from last night and so far concerns the virtues of those who bear the Quran, as well as what is owed to the bearers of the Quran. But being a bearer of the Quran, one who has memorized the Book of Allah, it is simultaneously a taklif and a tashrif, meaning it is an honor, but it is also a very heavy, weighty responsibility. It's not just an honor. With that honor comes a heavy responsibility. And that is usually the case for many other things that are considered an honor for a believer. It's an honor, but it also entails a responsibility. And so just as we have certain adab or etiquettes towards those who bear the Quran, there are certain etiquettes that they have to uphold as well. And we have a narration recorded by Imam al-Hakim in his Mustadrak from Ibn Umar radiallahu anhuma, who relates that the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam said, whosoever memorizes the Quran has gathered nubuwa between his ribs, except that revelation does not come to them. Why is this said? It's because they memorized the Book of Allah. And so it's as if they've gathered nubuwa between their ribs, meaning they memorized it in their heart. He says, except that revelation does not come to them. He says, it does not behoove the bearer of the Quran, meaning it's not fitting, la yanbaghi. It is not does not behoove the bearer of the Quran to become angry along with those who become angry, or to behave ignorantly with those who behave ignorantly whilst the speech of Allah is contained in his breast. So there's a higher standard for those who bear the Quran. It is taklif and tashrif combined, an honor and a responsibility. There are certain expectations upon the Hamalatul Quran. And speaking about these responsibilities and this heavy duty on them, Al-Imam An-Nawawi rahmatullahi alayhi talks about this in his Tibyan on the etiquette of these people. And he says, he cites a narration from Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiyallahu anhu. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, he said, the Hamidul Qur'an, the bearer of the Qur'an, should be known by his night when the people are sleeping, by his day when the people are awake, by his sorrow when the people are laughing, by his silence when the people are engrossed in conversation, and by his fear when the people are pompous. So this means that the Hamidul Qur'an, who has memorized the Qur'an and internalized its meanings, they should demonstrate a higher standard of behavior than those who are not from the Hamalatul Qur'an. They should not be as quick to anger as those who do not have the Qur'an. They should not behave ignorantly and insolently and rudely as others might behave. And they should stand out in being people of Qiyamul Layl while others may sleep. And they should be known in the day as being different from those who do not have that great honor. This is a high expectation. And the reality is we're all human beings. And even among those who memorize the entire Qur'an, not all of them are able to live up to that high responsibility. That is a fact. When you look in the early works of our scholars from the early Islamic tradition, you find that just as there are all these narrations which praise those who bear the Qur'an, there's also lots of narrations that criticize those who bear the Qur'an for not being able to live up to the high standard. Imam Abu Sulaiman al-Khattabi, rahmatullahi alayhi, in his Kitab al-Uzla, he has a whole chapter about those who were, you know, they're in the madrasa memorizing Qur'an, but they haven't internalized it. He has a whole chapter about those types of people who did not live up to the high standard that should be maintained by those who memorize the Qur'an. A whole chapter. And he brings some really wild stories, you know, from the Salaf. I'll give you one example. One of the Salaf, I don't remember his name, he was talking about how he would try to avoid the company of the Qurra of his day, meaning, you know, the madrasa students, you know, because he found that there's a lot of envy, there was a lot of jealousy, and that's quite common, unfortunately. He said when he would move to an area, he would ask the people, find me a plot that's not so close to those guys. Because if I'm living around them, you know, there'll be some jealousy between us. And, you know, these guys have a reputation. You know, these guys, they will, they'll get jealous of me. And they'll call for some, you know, young boy who's singing and playing an instrument. And then they'll call the neighborhood and they'll put the guy outside of my house. And they'll call the neighborhood and say, hey, come look at what this guy's doing. They'll hire him to do that, to basically frame him. All because of jealousy. That should not overshadow these virtues, but it's also a warning. With every encouragement, there's also a discouragement. With everything that gives you glad tidings of reward and benefit, there's also warnings of neglect. It is a high standard. It is taklif and tashrif. It's an honor, but it's also a heavy responsibility. هذا وصلى الله وسلم على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم.